Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and happy to be here with you all today. Some big news in my life. Wanted to share about Raw Artist, R-A-W Artist, A-R-T-I-S-T-S .org, Raw Artist. It's been around 4 years. It's in 81 cities. It will be going international. And these are artist events sponsored and hosted by artists to shed a spotlight on some emerging talent in performing arts, visual arts, makeup, design, and accessories. And yours truly was just notified about a week ago that we're going to be in the Raw Artist show for St. Louis on September 20th at 2720 Cherokee. So real excited to be participating in that with the jewelry we make. And creativity is one of our themes today. We're interviewing a wonderful woman who I've met just in the last few months. Her name is Rachel Serino. Rachel, are you with us today?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, welcome to Alive to Thrive. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you?
Good, good. Well, Rachel and I connected through the Women's Power Networking, and we'll be talking about that organization, which is national, and it might be in the state you live in. And if it's not, we'll tell you how you can start a Women's Power Networking chapter where you live. So we met through that. I was a speaker in May, and Rachel just had great energy and was very dynamic. And actually, a little bit prior to that, I think I had ordered some gift baskets from her. She's the owner and creative director of A Cat in a Basket, which is such a clever name, but it's even a more clever business. She launched it in January 2009 after finding herself laid off from the corporate world. And one of the themes we talk about on Alive to Thrive are showcasing people that have overcome a situation, a curveball, if you will. When life throws them a curveball, they reinvent themselves, and they do that successfully. So want to talk a little bit, Rachel, first, before we talk about your business, about your childhood, because I haven't had a guest on my program that grew up in Malaysia, and wanted to ask what that was like and, you know, what your childhood pastimes were.
Sure. You know, like you said, I grew up in Malaysia, was born and raised there. I was born on in Borneo, which is East Malaysia. It's an island off of the peninsula of Malaysia. And at the time, my dad was flying for the rural air services for Malaysia Airlines and was posted out there flying in the interior jungles of Borneo. To lots of villages and basically transporting goods and people. And so I was born there, and few years later, they moved back to Kuala Lumpur, which is the capital of Malaysia, and, you know, for the most part, grew up there, went to school there, and I even went to university in Malaysia and graduated there. But growing up, I had a very interesting childhood, because like I mentioned, my dad was a pilot flying for the airlines. But it didn't stop there. For my dad and for our family, we were a flying family. We grew up around airplanes. He taught himself to fly through a local flying club and eventually joined the airlines, and he became an instructor even before that, and he was about 18 when he started flying. And that just kind of basically his interest from his childhood interest of airplanes carried on into his adult life. and into his family life. And so we did everything around airplanes. We grew up in a flying club. He was constantly teaching people how to fly. He flew radio control airplanes. We built them together. So a lot of our activities were revolving around flying. And when I was about, in 1990, he participated in air race and was introduced to the Experimental Aircraft Association that's based out here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And he decided that he was going to start a chapter in Malaysia, and the first Asian chapter at that too. So he basically dived in with my mom as his secretary and assistant, and they've started this whole organization, encouraging people to build their own home-built aircraft and fly it in Malaysia. It was basically an unknown avenue at that time, and so he became a pioneer in that area. But with that, there was a program called Young Eagles Program that was run by the Experimental Aircraft Association that were focused on encouraging children to fly and introducing them to the world of aviation, whether it be flying or, you know, being an engineer or building an airplane, whatever that may be. But it was basically all about introducing children to aviation. And so my dad took that program to Malaysia, obviously, and we started doing camps. And as I grew up around these camps, always assisting and helping and, you know, growing up in the airport, really, when I graduated high school at the age of 17, that was the earliest and the youngest that you could get a student pilot's license in Malaysia. My dad's only request was I couldn't go to college until I learned how to fly and I got a private pilot's license.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. So that
was
his only requirement of me, and he said I would pay for college. You can go, but you cannot go until you complete this. So I took 3 months out of high school, and our system there is slightly different as far as education goes. So we had 3 months to wait before we could get into any higher learning institutions. So during that 3 months, you know, we flew pretty much every day. I never slept. He was always ground school every day, 24 hours. And eventually, because I started off so quickly and so young at the very age that we could start off, when I did earn my private pilot's license, it was recorded by the Department of Civil Aviation over there that I was the youngest pilot licensed in the country of Malaysia.
Wow, and that's male or female?
That is male or female, that is true.
Wow.
And apparently, I still keep in touch. My parents are still very active aviators in Malaysia still. And apparently, I still hold that record. No one's ever tried to do it so early.
Wow. I just think that's so amazing because, I mean, women in aviation is, you know, only about 100 years old as it is here in this country.
Yeah.
And I grew up really loving Amelia Earhart and loving aviation. My brother had his pilot's license and... I don't know what it was. My dad must have instilled it in me as well. He would always take me to the NASA launching area down in Florida, Cape Canaveral, and show me the rockets. And my brother would launch off little rockets in the yard. But somehow there was a disconnect with, you know, the women in our family weren't encouraged, so much as sort of more the male to take up flying. So I just think that's amazing. Were there other women in aviation that you saw as role models when you were growing up?
Not in Malaysia, no. You know, of course, Amelia Earhart was one of the most significant icons at the time. And, you know, as I was growing up and as I was starting to learn how to fly, you know, I recently reconnected and was reminded to Patrice when we met her at the luncheon about the 99s. And, you know, my dad, and then all of a sudden it flashed back because when I was learning how to fly and getting into that mode, my dad was always saying, you know, you could go to, if you ever end up in the U.S. or you go to college there, you go to study there, you know, you should join the organization in the 99s. And he was always, you know, my dad was very enthusiastic. He never put any limitations on me. In fact, he was my biggest cheerleader. And my mom, too, in her own way. But she was always like, you know, oh, no, you know, we cannot do that. She cannot do that. But he was always very encouraging. And when I turned 16, I said, I'm going to ride a motorcycle. And my mom about, you know, fell off her chair. But my dad was like, yes, let's do this. You know, so he was always very encouraging in my tomboy ways, I should say.
Well, and I do want to back up for our listeners who may not know the Patrice that you referred to. That's
yes.
Patrice Billings, who was the first female law enforcement officer to fly helicopters in the United States, who spoke at a Women's Power Networking not long ago. And so Patrice and other women are in a group called the 99s, which is an organization for women pilots started by
yep.
Amelia Earhart and some others in the 1920s, I believe, is when it started. So
yep.
You mentioned Oshkosh. Did you ever go there for any of the aviation events?
Yes, they do the huge fly-in, you know, they call the world's largest fly-in every year in the summer. And I'm trying to backtrack some years now. I want to say 94 or 96 in that time frame. One of that year summers, my dad actually brought us all out. He had actually done a trip before that, flying into Oshkosh from Kansas and, you know, on a little Cessna, a single-engine plane, flying into Oshkosh with a group of people. And so after that, he took us up there, you know, had made a lot of friends. And so we went when I was about 14. And then we, you know, ever since then, we didn't really make a trip back. And I suffer from something called short-term memory. I remember a lot of things, but I don't remember details. And so fast forward, you know.
Let me ask you, how old were you when you first came to the United States as a visitor?
I was 24.
So what were your impressions prior to coming to the United States? What had you heard about the U.S.? What did you see on TV or radio or magazines? I mean, what was your impressions of the culture here?
And honestly, I tend to keep a very open mind about, you know, cultures. And I think this also stems from our traveling background. We did a lot of traveling growing up. You know, my parents took us to L.A. when I was four, and, you know, we did the whole San Francisco and Disneyland and a whole bunch of traveling, mostly in the California region. But, you know, I was four when we first came here, so I'd kind of seen things. So I honestly didn't form any opinion. You know, then when I was 13 and 14, we were here again for more travels, and then Oshkosh, and then, you know, fast forward that, I came, you know, I finally actually moved here in 2004, and, you know, that, but I did have some impressions, and mostly impressions about school, because I'd never been to school here, and with movies that I watch, you know, the culture of children growing up, or teenagers, and now that, you know, again, now 8 years later, I have my own children that are now starting to go into the school system, and I am watching this, and it's very, of course, you know, from watching movies, nothing is the same as living here and actually experiencing it. And today, I honestly just feel like this is my home. This is where I was meant to be for now, you know?
Yeah. Now, was the perception of teens and kids better or worse in the popular culture or in the movies than it is here?
I want to say it's a little hyped up in movies from what we're watching over there. And
hyped up
in
terms of being rough or?
No, not in terms of being rough, in terms of being very materialistic and just having such a great time in school. You know, there's no reality to what really goes on in school in terms of dressing, in terms of owning cell phones or cars, you know, and just the whole school culture is very, it's not portrayed the way it is here.
Right.
On TV.
And so many things
are
distorted in popular culture. And I often wonder about that, you know, because when I've traveled in Europe, you know, in different parts of the world, there are
right.
parts of the world that don't have really high opinions of the United States, or they think that the streets are lined with gold, or everyone's
right.
like millionaires or something. And it's just interesting. I love talking to people from other cultures to hear what their thoughts were, but also, you know, what it was like to acclimate, because I cannot imagine the challenges to go to a whole new culture. And, you know, I've moved across country at least three times, I guess,
right,
from New England to D.C., D.C. to Colorado, Colorado to Missouri. And
right,
I know just moving domestically, there were there was local culture shock in terms of, you know, learning the local customs. There's things here in Missouri that are very different than Colorado and very different from the East Coast, and et cetera. So how long did it take you till you felt like you, you know, fit in? And what were some of the first things? I mean, you moved here not knowing anyone. Is that correct?
Well, actually, I came to visit. And so this is kind of I guess I should go to the backstory of how I ended up here and ended up living here.
Yeah.
It goes back to my motorcycle riding and airplane flying. I decided for the longest time I had my eye on a Honda Prelude. Don't ask me why. It was just this car that I really desperately wanted. And so I had started, you know, I graduated college and I was working in Malaysia. And finally my job there had started taking me traveling every day, you know, to a client site. And so I said, well, I need a car now. And so I announced that, and a friend of the family had a Honda Prelude, and he was getting married and decided he did not need his little sporty car anymore. So I bought the car off him, and I was so excited about this car, and, you know, I was looking at it and learning more about it, and it has something called an electronic four-wheel system that for the steering. And one day I realized that that whole system was not working. I was not necessarily going to fix it myself, so I started doing some research and going online. I ran across this car, this bulletin board for the Honda Prelude community, and apparently it was a big community here, spread out all across the U.S. of Honda Prelude owners. They met all the time for car meets and once a year for a Honda Prelude meet, and they all knew each other. Everybody knew each other. They were all communicating online, and I said, "Hey, I have a question." And someone posted a PDF. It has the whole schematic of how to fix this electronic system. Just ended up needing some parts to be soldered. Took it to my mechanic. We fixed it. I was so excited. And I was like, oh, my gosh, these people know so much on this website and, you know, on this bulletin board. So it was a big community, and I kind of start talking to them, and everybody was interested, like, oh, Malaysia. And, you know, they start talking to me more, and we, you know, of course, we drive on the other side of the road. The car is a right-hand drive, so it's, you know, very exciting.
Oh,
for
that was a big adjustment too. Yeah.
That's a big adjustment. So anyways, I ended up talking to a bunch of people, and one of them was James, who is today my husband. And after about 6 months of this, I finished a contract job in Malaysia and said I was going to go travel because my younger brother was in a college in San Francisco in the Bay Area. And he's been here a couple of years, and I've never come up to visit, and I was a big adventurous spirit, and I was doing a lot of traveling in Asia. I said, let's go. And I know all these people that I can, you know, sort of meet in a safe zone in California with my brother there. So I came up, I flew up here and took some time off, you know, it was kind of an open-ended deal. I was just going to travel and met a few of these people, including my husband, James. It also timed it with our national Prelude meet that was happening in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I came up to Missouri, met the few people I knew here, and we drove from Missouri to Tulsa, had a great time, met all these great people, came back to Missouri, spent more time here, you know, because James and I had been really good friends. And then I went back to California and traveled around the country a little bit. But in the whole time, we'd been communicating, and at some point, he proposed. I mean, it just kind of came out of the blue. He proposed, and we planned a wedding, and that was it, and I was here. So it was kind of a whirlwind situation. It wasn't planned. It wasn't a premeditated, hey, I'm going to the U.S., I'm moving there. So I think in that sense, the adjustment for me was not as shocking because it wasn't really something that I had thought about, and so I wasn't overthinking it at the time. And I was 24. I was pretty young, and I was pretty adventurous at the time. And I was like, you know, let's do this.
Was it hard to not have a lot of your friends here for your wedding? I mean, not everyone can travel across the world to
attend
the wedding.
My family, my parents came in. My brother obviously was here, so he came I have an aunt who lives in Arizona, Scottsdale, Arizona. So she and her husband came up, but that was it. That was a representation. The hard part now that I look back, you know, we just ended up having we had a nice little wedding. It was mostly, you know, James's family that was, you know, part of the wedding party and helping me plan. But now that I look back on it, I was like, you know, now that I have a big community of people and friends here, I was like, oh, how I wish, you know, she could have been my bridesmaid or she could have been there to witness that. But, you know, we move on and, you know, we grow. But, you know, that was for me to be here and getting married, even with those limited circumstances, was a blessing because my life has changed and, you know, for the better. And I have, that's kind of
well,
why
I think what amazes me, Rachel, that I think you could teach to so many women is, number one, you have huge confidence in your own abilities, and maybe that was from, you know, learning to fly at a young age and stretching your own boundaries. You have huge confidence
right.
in yourself, in your skills, in your creativity, confidence that things are going to work out. I mean, confidence that no matter what your circumstances or surroundings, that you're going to be okay. You're comfortable in your own skin. That's something that I found. I mean, I didn't get there till my late 40s, almost 50s, before I could say I felt that way. And I know a lot of people do, you know, they do counseling, they do support groups, they do church, they do all these things to get to that place. And I find it very rare to meet someone like you that had that, you know, that upbringing from great parents that just encouraged you to be anything you wanted to be. But I am curious why you didn't think of a full-time career in aviation as a pilot. Did that cross your mind to be a full-time pilot?
Yeah, it sure is. It never crossed my mind as being wanting to do that as a career, but it's a sore point with my dad till today. At the time, they were starting up a commuter airline in Asia called Air Asia. And again, growing up there, it's a little challenging being a woman and trying to pioneer things. And Malaysia Airlines, till today, still doesn't accept women pilots. There's no such thing.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. I mean, there's no, like, particular rule, but just everybody knows that. Nobody applies. It's all good. And AirAsia came up, and then, you know, after I – and this was several years later after I'd already been licensed and flying. The whole concept of AirAsia was coming out, and they were like, you know, we're going to train girls to, you know, out of school. And so then there was a lot more interest when little younger girls were learning how to fly or wanting to learn how to fly. And my dad actually some of the first female pilots for AirAsia how to fly, getting their private pilot's license, and then eventually moving on to flight school. Anyways, so of course they were like, you know, my dad's very well known in the aviation industry, and they were like, you know, your daughter should, you know, go to flight school and come join us and be an airline pilot. So the only thing was, I watched my dad be an airline pilot for so many years, and you know, all his life, he just retired from Malaysia Airlines after 36 years.
Wow.
And still not.
It's grueling. It's a grueling schedule, and you have to be away weekends and sometimes miss special occasions.
He was gone so much. And in the back of my mind, even though I was not ready, I said, I know at some point I wanted to settle down. I wanted to have a baby. I wanted to do that, you know. And I was like, if I jump into the airline industry now, that would be my path for a long time. And that wasn't what I wanted to do. And I was always, and again, it comes back to what you said about me being very confident, very in my own skin. And I was like, you know, I'm doing this. I'm going to college. I'm getting this degree. And I'm going to find a job myself. And in Asia, you tend to have, you know, you need to know someone to get a job. And you have to, you know, my mom was always like, I'll call my friend. I'll call this person. I'm like, no, mom, I'll do this on my own. And I did. But that's why my dad still a sore point with him, because today he was like, you know, you could be a captain with this airline and doing all of this. And I'm like, well, Dad, you do realize that you may not have two grandchildren if that had happened. So he's like, well, yes.
there's a price and a cost to everything, and there are always trade-offs, and you have
there
to
is.
Decide what's your bigger priority. And
yeah.
you know, but it's great that you had the choices and you had options. And
I did.
So many women.
I am blessed to have that.
Yeah, so many women from whatever country do not have those options, and so
no.
many women live in economic impoverishment and lack of education
exactly.
and all kinds of things. And
oh, yeah.
You know, worldwide empowerment of women is one of my passions. And so,
mm-hmm.
Have you thought about going back to Malaysia and other countries to speak to groups of young girls to inspire them to be anything they want to be?
You know, now, yes. If you asked me this couple of, maybe even 3 years or 2 or 3 years ago, I would have probably been like, what would I talk about? You know, yeah, okay, I learned how to fly. I did all that. But I think I've evolved in my own self. You know, you've mentioned a little bit on your site about me being part of the Women's Power Networking and owning my own business and growing in that area. But in the last 3 years that I've been doing more, you know, reaching out to communities, building my own leadership skills, yes, now you ask me that question, I'll say yes. That is something that has crossed my mind that I should do and want to do.
I think all of us have a role to play to teach and inspire for the women
yes.
that are confident to be able to speak, especially to teens and women of all ages. It amazes
yeah.
me how many people live very limited lives, have given up hope on their dreams. And we're going to come back after the break. We have to take a short break here for a minute
sure.
or two. When we come back, we're going to talk about Women's Power Networking. What is it? What are the benefits
yes.
of networking with professional women and having your own business and talking
yes.
about that to inspire women to consider working for themselves instead of going to a job or working in an environment that's just I found for myself soul killing as opposed to
yes.
soul expansion. So we'll
mm-hmm.
be right back after a short commercial and station identification. You're listening to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and our guest today is Rachel Serino, owner of a Cat in a Basket. Fantastic. We'll hear more about her business when we get back from break. Stay with us.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com. and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
Ayer que me llevas en la tienda, me diste una lección. Cuando a la señora se le cayó el billete, tú lo recogiste y se lo entregaste. Entendí lo que es ser honrado. Gracias, papá, por enseñarme algo que no olvidaré jamás.
Pasa tiempo con tus hijos. En un instante puedes motivarlos.
Parece que fue ayer, papá. Me acuerdo cómo lloraba. No yo. Mi...
Welcome to the Maya and Miguel Challenge. Meet Maya and the gang.
Oh, hi, I'm Maya.
Maya and her friends want you to get up and play, because it's always more fun to be active. Just go to letsmove.gov and look for Maya and Miguel. You'll find tons of fun activities that'll help keep you healthy and active. Whether you play sports, run, dance, or jump in place, just get up and play at least an hour a day. Take the Maya and Miguel Challenge today at letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Welcome back. You're listening to Alive to Thrive. This is Blog Talk Radio. My name is Brenda Fraser, and I'm your host today, as I am every Friday at 12 noon Central, 10 a.m. Pacific. I do want to make a shout-out to Raw Artist, RAWARTISTS.org. This is events happening around the country. There's one in almost every city, every state in the country, 81 different locations in the United States and worldwide. It's expanding internationally, and it's a way to focus attention on natural-born artists in art, fashion, music, film, hair, makeup, photography, and performing arts. And the one for St. Louis will be coming on September 20th to the 2720 Cherokee Street area. You can go to rawartist.org, click on a city to see if there's one coming to a city near you. I know I'll be going out to Boulder, Colorado next weekend and visiting the one there on Sunday, the 25th of August, and getting ready to prepare in my first ever time as a Raw Artist with our jewelry, Butterfly and Moon. And if you'd like to support my jewelry and our efforts to be in this showcase, go to rawartist.org/butterfly and moon. Thank you so much for that. And we're talking with someone today, Rachel Serino, who's very, very creative. She has a business called Cat in a Basket, and basically created this business after being laid off from a corporate job. And, you know, so many times people might fall into a slump or get depressed or keep, you know, sort of banging their head on the brick wall instead of reinventing themselves. So, Rachel, how did you decide to just try something completely different than what you had been doing?
Sure. A little bit of my background, I've always been very crafty. I was always trying to start crafty little businesses. And again, coming from my background, you know, we know I'm from Malaysia. And so it wasn't something that was openly encouraged. It wasn't something that you go pursue making cards as a business. You know, you went to college, you got a job in a respectable company, and you earn your salary every month, and you carried on like everybody else mm-hmm. or retired with that company. So. Mm-hmm. Well, that was the kind of the upbringing that I was, but I've always been crafty. I was 7 years old, I started making cards and started selling them. I sold them to all, my mom comes from a very big family. I just kept selling them to everybody I knew and met. And you know, subsequently started, you know, when I was in college, I would do manicures and pedicures and nail art for all my aunts, and they would pay me. And so that was my little business at that time. So I've always been crafty. I just never pursued it actively. So I fell into that rut. College, you know, corporate job, was an IT recruiter for almost 10 years out of college. And while it was a very fulfilling job for me, towards the last year and a half in 2007, 2008, it became more a strain. It wasn't a job that I enjoyed helping people anymore with. It became about the numbers, about finding the best, the fastest candidate, you know, dog, how many candidates can we get into a job, you know, how much commission can we make? There was no pleasure in helping anybody anymore. Nobody cared who they were helping. So, and then the IT industry sort of crashed at that time. And in 2008, the Monday before Thanksgiving, I was laid off from my job here in the U.S. I was already working here, and I had a one-year-old baby, and it was the holiday. So I finally decided, I said, okay, we're going to go on a budget. We're not going to mope about, you know, moped about it for a day. I would say I will mope about it, but that
mope
was it.
About it
and
one day. That's good. I like that. Give yourself a time limit. If you're going to mope, have a time limit on a
where how long you're going to stay there. Okay, good.
Exactly. And my brother came into town for Thanksgiving, so we had a great time. But now we were on a budget, and I said, you know, we've got to start making gifts for, we had a small family here, you know, my husband's family. So I was like, let's start making our gifts, you know. So I started baking breads and putting mixes together, and then I started putting gift baskets together. And it didn't cross my mind that it could be a business. But then as I finished the baskets and I put them up on the table, I'm looking at them and I told my husband, I was like, that's just so beautiful. I'm taking a picture of it. And you know what? I think I should sell them. And he was like, whatever. You know, just can you just get the baskets ready and let's go? And so that's the way I think. And I called a few friends. I said, you know, what do you think? I think this is a great idea. I will do a local delivery. It'll be a custom service. And people can choose what they want. They don't have to go to a site and just choose a cookie cutter basket.
Yeah.
And a few of my friends thought it was a great idea. And so I had one unemployment check after I was laid up, just one. And I took the whole thing and invested it in an LLC, a website, and a logo, and I was on my merry way.
It's a lot easier than people realize in terms of getting an LLC. If you're listening and out there and curious, go to your Secretary of State's website, and often they have all kinds of buttons and resources on starting your own business. You can download the form. Usually it's about $100. It's not real expensive. You can have a little LLC, and even before having the LLC, you can just set up shop and call yourself a business. Make sure to keep all your receipts, because a lot of things are tax deductible with a home-based business. Your office, your computer, your even home improvements can be.
Bills,
And a certain percentage of your utility and things, because you're running your business from your home. And there's some very generous tax cuts, tax breaks for home-based business, about 150 different ones. And so I really want to encourage women and men to think about working for themselves. It's a huge growing trend in the United States. The government wants to encourage. I mean, it's much better for people to have home-based business than to be on unemployment. I mean, that's awesome.
Right.
You're only on there one week, one check. So I had a chuckle when I saw on your bio about your greeting card business at 7, because I too was that way. I was, you know, I always had these little stands. I was selling things outside, and I had a little stamp collection business, and I, you know, different things. And I think that's fabulous that you also developed with your creativity. And I mean, there are other gift basket companies out there, but your name is very unique, Cat in a Basket.
Yes.
How did you come up with that name?
So that's going back to when I decided I was going to launch this business. I did that, and I said, I need a name. And so, you know, I'm sitting there brainstorming, and my husband is telling me, oh, how about Rachel's Gift Baskets? I'm like, blah, you know, that's not fun. No. And so I'm sitting there trying to think about this, and I had this big, beautiful Christmas basket. It was empty. I was going to start working on it, and I was sitting there, and my cat, Hobbs, I only have one cat. He was my baby, you know, before the human babies came along. He climbs up into this basket, curls up in there. And I took a beautiful picture of him, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. I should just call it Cat in a Basket and put a tagline, Custom Gift Basket. Everybody will want to talk to me about it. And sure enough, 5 years later, all everybody want to know is, what do you do? What is Cat in a Basket? And it starts a conversation. It always starts a conversation.
It's true, and I think we met probably on social media probably a couple of years before actually meeting in person. Or I know I've seen you at trade shows and Working Women Expo, and because it is a memorable name. And I think that's a tip for people thinking about starting their own business, is get a name that's unique. Don't use your own name. Don't use, you know, so-and-so and associates. I think that is so boring and dull. But you want to set yourself apart. And I remember when I was coming up with my business name of Gala Force, I was going through magazines, and there was a headline about these three women who raised money for the art museum in New York City, and it said Gala Force. And I'm like, that's it. And you just know it. If you trust your intuition, when the right name comes along, you just know it. You have that feeling like this is it. And so don't stop until you get to that point that you can identify with that name as being like just something that just makes you happy. And even after all these years, I've expanded my business so much beyond galas and black tie dinners,
right,
which was what I started out doing, now to include the jewelry, and we have a DBA as Butterfly and Moon. And so, you know, again, for people thinking about starting their own business, you can set up an LLC under any name, and then you can set up DBAs as doing business as other names and have that all come under your one business title. So you have very unusual custom gift baskets. Diaper cakes, those are, I know, are hugely popular, aren't they?
Yes, they are for baby showers, you know, people looking to give functional gifts and beautiful gifts at the same time, affordable. And so the idea behind Cat in a Basket is not just the custom gift baskets. I like people calling me and saying, look, this is who I'm sending it to. These are their favorite things and colors, and they like this and this. And I put it together, and they say, well, and I have an X amount budget. So I work with them, and I, you know, they
That's
get what
great.
They want. Yeah, and
That's
they do
neat.
It all on the phone. I do have pre-made baskets, you know, like on the website. But more, you know, in the 5 years that I've been doing this, I always get a call. I really like that, but I want to change something in it. And so same with the diaper cakes. I'm always about giving gifts that someone's going to use and not just re-gift or shove it in a linen closet somewhere and maybe one day look at it and throw it out or recycle it. So that's the idea of why I wanted to come up with the custom gift baskets. But over the time, you know, you've mentioned like with Gala Force, you know, over time you've expanded and, you know, done so many different things, and you're now doing a DBA. And the same way, I kind of watch trends. People have asked me for different things. Can you do this? Can you do that? And sometimes, and for most part, I always say, sure, let me take a look, and guess what? I've got a new product now. So then it's
so what are you seeing? Yeah, what are you seeing as trends? I know there's more of a trend towards healthier eating and less sugar and more healthier choices. What are you seeing as some trends?
Especially with the gift baskets, I see that trend. You know, a lot more people are calling me and asking me for baskets with fresh fruit, with nuts, with, you know, quality cheeses, not just the usual cookies and candy and fillers to fill a basket. It's now very specifically to the health, you know, healthier side. So I do a lot of fruit and gourmet baskets with good quality stuff, a wine basket, and then there's lots of team baskets that I do that I do a lot of gardening baskets, especially this time of year, for people who like to do, you know, who are gardeners and just with tools and seeds and different things. So it's all functional, all usable stuff that when they get, they're not going to say, oh, I don't eat that stuff or I don't use
well,
that stuff.
I think that is key. Functional stuff, especially tailored to the interests of the person,
right,
as opposed to these generic baskets that, as you say, they end up in yard sales or the nuts are stale or something. So you do some very specific. Now, what was the strangest request you ever got?
The strangest request, and I wouldn't call it strange because it was actually very thoughtful. It was one of my very first orders, and it's still a very memorable one that today. A lady had called me out of Maryville, Illinois at the time, and her sister-in-law was going to start chemo. But her sister-in-law was like a tough biker chick too. And she said, I want to give her a basket with stuff that she's going to need while she's going for chemo. And so we customed everything. You know, she ended up getting a beautiful robe, a soft one with plush slippers, because apparently patients going through chemo get very cold. And I sourced out a special lotions and special lip balms that were meant for people going through radiation and chemo. We did the little suckers that was for nausea, the little ginger pops stuff for nausea. So we put those in there, a blanket. I mean, it's just so thoughtful, so beautiful. And then on top of that, she said, but she's kind of fun. I mean, she's really going to kick this in the behind. And so she wanted me to include some different items with the phrase cancer sucks on it. And so we did. And I mean, that till today, I mean, this was 5 years ago when I first started. It's still one of the most memorable, most thoughtful gifts that I put together. And, you know, I was honored that I was asked to do something like that. And it really meant a lot because it was something that she could use and she knew that people were thinking of her.
Wow. Now, I assume you ship anywhere in the world?
Not in the world. I mean, I can ship internationally, and we will too. It's just that it costs a lot more, especially with, larger size baskets. So for right now, we're doing shipping anywhere in the United States. It's not a problem. And we've also expanded to include, the diaper cakes for baby showers. And then we've kind of jumped on the cake pop craze, if anybody's heard of that. But it's little bites of cake blended with frosting and dipped in chocolate, put on a stick.
Oh.
And we started out doing gift sets. I started doing that as gift sets, little boxes, send as gifts, corporate gifts. And it kind of started, it's kind of taken over the business all summer long this year, and people are using it more for favors and parties. And so I expanded that in a basket to include dessert buffets. So now I actually set up dessert buffets, designed them very custom, very creative to a team for bridal showers, for weddings, for birthday parties, anniversaries, graduations, whatever, or even corporate
parties.
Oh,
my goodness. So you're getting more into the event side of things and expanding beyond just the gift-giving side of things into events, which is huge, as I know. And to carry out a theme, to carry out either a charity at a nonprofit event, their logo, or a business event, their logo and their colors makes a big impact. And speaking of charity, I know you are actively involved in giving back to your community. Talk a little bit about some of your favorite charities and the ways that you have been giving back locally.
Sure. I always believe to start in my own community. And since right now, like I said, earlier I mentioned that Missouri and St. Louis have become my community. This is where I feel I belong right now. And when I first came here, before I was able to work, I was volunteering at our church. And I was babysitting kids while moms went to Bible studies. And then they said, we have this charity at Easter. We're making little, putting gift baskets together for the crisis nursery. And I was jobless. So on Good Friday of that first year, I said, I'll pack my car up and drive down to this crisis nursery and deliver all these baskets. So I did that. And I did that a second year. And then the following year, I just got busy and distracted. I didn't do it. And so went back to 2010 when I had my business. I told my husband, I need to do an event. And he said, what kind of event? I said, well, I want to do an event to promote local mothers in business or local women in business, kind of like a vendor event. So I started putting the framework together, and halfway through planning all of that, I decided this should be an event to give back. And immediately the crisis nursery came back to my mind. And so I called them, I connected with Bonnie, who's their PR director, and we went ahead and set up something. She gave me some support. We met, and the event, generated basically 20% of the sales towards the crisis nursery. It was small.
Fantastic.
But but we got a few hundred dollars. We gave it to them. But then I got so involved. I joined the Best Friends. It's a community. It's a group that put together events and assists the crisis nursery in fundraising. But the mission behind the crisis nursery and why I believe so much in it is because we're keeping kids and babies in our own community right here in St. Louis, nowhere else, safe and alive. There's so many young parents or people going through financial difficulties that have so much burden when they have their children that sometimes, unfortunately, abuse and death is the only answer to them for their children. And the crisis nursery operates out of the system, so you can call. You have a 24-hour helpline. Families in this particular situation can call this helpline and say, "I just cannot do this anymore," and they will take your child in.
A fantastic organization, and if a woman is going through a divorce or a domestic violence situation, her child can be cared for a couple hours, get a healthy snack, get a nap. They have all kinds of, and it's very beautiful, well done. One in St. Louis, one in St. Charles, and fantastic organization.
There's actually two in St. Charles, Wentzville. There's, I think, up to six nurseries plus several outreach centers for teens. So if they've got older children, there's outreach centers for them. But there is the regular housing, the centers take babies through 12 years old.
And the point is if everyone does something and if everyone thinks about giving back locally, we can live in a very different world than we live in. And so I commend you for that. And you also do some charity stuff through the Women's Power Networking. And I know this year Jane Doe Advocacy has been the featured nonprofit organization which helps women with legal issues and various things who are going through sexual violence or domestic violence issues. And so let's talk about the Women's Power Networking. We only have 10 minutes left. It's gone so fast.
I know.
We have so much to talk about. We'll have to have you on again in the maybe closer to Christmas talking about holiday gift ideas. But let's talk about Women's Power Networking. Where did it start and how did you get involved?
It is a national organization. It was started by two women, Jean Hedges and Marilyn Shannon, out in Raleigh, North Carolina. And so they started this organization with the idea that women do business and network differently. You know, we are all about building relationships, learning about each other before we even talk about the business. And we're very compassionate once we have a relationship together, and we're great at building alliances and connecting people. So putting all this together in a mission, they started Women's Power Networking. The idea behind the meetings, we have weekly meetings every, you know, with different chapters all around different areas. But the idea is to network, build a relationship, and give and gain referrals to grow your business. And in addition to growing your business, there are a lot of tools in place to help women with public speaking, increasing their confidence and their leadership skills. So in 2012, I joined this organization here in Missouri. It was started and led by another lady who was running it here, and we had four chapters. About 2 months into starting, I started another chapter in St. Charles, Florida, because I was living here, and there was not really a women's networking group, especially in the evenings for women here. And so I started a chapter up here, and I dived really quickly into leadership roles. You know, I took on a role as speaker area director, events area director, and started doing all these things, helped start another chapter. You know, it was just kind of going snowballing. In March of this year, I took over as the Missouri area director. And so now I oversee the entire Missouri area for Women's Power Networking, all the chapters, all the events. And I have been blessed by this organization. The women that have come into, that I've met, that have come to join the organization, and the relationships that I have built for myself have been invaluable. You know, not just becoming my friends or business partners, but being part of my family too. Coming from Malaysia, I don't have a lot of family here, basically no family. And so they have become my support group in that sense too. But going back to Women's Power Networking and the way we do, I'm a big believer of you are the people you surround yourself with. And I can attribute a lot of my success right now, even in my business and in my personal confidence, is the people that I've been surrounded with through WPN has just changed the way I see things. There are a lot of things that are coming through now that I maybe had it and was in me, but it's now blossoming, finally. And
wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a great organization. Like I said, we have four chapters in the St. Louis area right now. We're working on three more in the fall season for this year. We have one in St. Charles, one in Kirkwood. We have one in Fenton and one in South County, and hopefully one in one across the river in Belleville soon in the city, and also in West County in the Chesterfield area. So that's what we're working on. In addition to that, we have monthly events. We have after-hours cocktails events once a month on the third Wednesday. And actually, next Wednesday at the new restaurant in St. Charles and 70 and 5th Street, Procino, we are hosting a cocktails in context event. And anybody who's interested, who's a entrepreneur or just starting to get out into the networking scene, you're welcome to join us. It's a casual event. It's from 4:30 to 6:30 to show up, have a drink with us, and meet some really awesome people to help you jumpstart your business. So that's next
fantastic.
Wednesday.
And just cool events like the Dream Board Workshop, where putting together a vision board together with friends It's fun, and I'll tell you what, I have had dream boards for the last several years, and one of them had a cruise ship on it. The following year, I took a cruise. One of them had a car that I thought was a BMW, but turns out it was a Volvo, and then I bought a Volvo, and then I realized the picture on my board was a Volvo. But I've had jewelry on my boards, and I'm going to take some pictures and put those maybe on Facebook, places I want to travel and uplifting quotes. So, you know, these are things that they really make a difference when you do things like visioning and talking about your dreams out loud with others.
And then we do it as a community. You're not doing it alone. It's not something, and, you know, it's all about the energy you put out. And so we do great events, you know, dream board events and showcases that, you know, are talking on certain topics, and we're educating everybody about information that's out there. We also do a luncheon with great power speakers like yourself. You know, that's how you got connected with us, was coming to speak and share your wisdom, your knowledge, and your, you know, expertise with the group. And so just WPN is what it's called for short, or womenspowernetworking.com. But it's a great organization, and anybody who's really an entrepreneur should come visit us and learn how to network, because that's one of my passions too, teaching women how to network. Now that I have started a business, tried to do it from the back of my computer and just kind of sit behind my screen and try to network, and it wasn't working for me. And then all of a sudden I get out in my community and, you know, my business just blows out the water. It's great. I mean, I'm just so busy. It's wonderful. But that's what networking will do for your business.
Well, and it's true. And I want to make sure people did get that website, womenspowernetworking.com. And do make sure you visit that website, and you can go to a local chapter once or twice as a guest to see if that's something you want to do. That's what I did. I went a couple of times as a guest, and then it was irresistible, really, because there's other women like Rachel that are dynamic, that are in various businesses. And everyone has an attitude of wanting to help each other and to serve. And, you know, it wasn't just a BNI group. I'm not knocking BNI. It's a great thing. But it is completely different. And networking groups for women in business, I've been in many, many of them. In fact, when I moved to Missouri 9 years ago and didn't know anyone, networking with women's groups really is what helps me feel at home in my area, but also helps with skill development and things that are maybe come easier for people like Rachel and I. Talking to people and meeting people aren't so easy for other people. And to learn how to network is a learned skill, but it's all skill-based. And we really encourage people to learn new skills and to be fully alive and thriving, not just surviving. So we're coming to the end of the program. Any closing thoughts, Rachel, as we wrap up? This has been a really fun hour. It went really fast.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's great. I didn't realize I could talk that much for an hour. But my closing thoughts is really to encourage anyone out there, woman or a man, who is thinking about jumping into the entrepreneurial world, to just do it. There's a quote from Amelia Earhart. It's like, you know, you can think about it, you can dwell on it, but really the idea is just do it. Just do it. It's just nothing to lose. It's just you're going to go out there, you put yourself out there. And for everybody that I've talked to has done that and taken that leap of faith, it is life-changing. And once you do that, surround yourself with positive people, with people with the right energies that will continue to push you forward and upward and not drag you down. That is the most important thing you can do for yourself.
That is perfect. Well, thank you so much. We're going to close. Do want to remind people to check out Raw Artist, R-A-W Artist, ARTIST.org, and check out a city near you where that event may be coming, and share this link with this program with others, facebook.com/alive to thrive. Appreciate anyone liking the page and sharing with your friends. Thanks again, and have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you.